Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. Representative Sean Bordeaux is from Mission. He is vice chairman of the State Tribal Relations Committee, and he joins us today with updates from the Tribal Relations Committee meeting on Monday, as well as the legislative planning meeting on Tuesday and more. Sean Bordeaux, welcome to Dakota Midday.
Thank you. I appreciate being on your show.
I should say welcome back. It's, I think, our third time sitting down together now.
I appreciate it, every bit of it.
All right, Tribal Relations Committee, earlier in the week, what's the goal of that gathering going into summer? Are there specific things that you're looking at for the months ahead?
Well, to set the stage for things, we wanted to start off in an area that we had some success in the state tribal relations, and so we covered public safety. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of good examples of public safety that are going on within the state, and we wanted to highlight those and hear from some of those folks. So we had invited some tribes in, and we invited our Secretary of Public Safety, Trevor Jones, in, and we invited also the Attorney General's office and had Assistant Attorney General Kristen Jasper visit with us. And members of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe and the Yankton Sioux Tribe also showed up, and a lot of discussions were, how do we improve public safety for South Dakota? How do we, you know, combat meth collectively between the two different, the state and the federal agencies and the tribes? How can we coordinate all of that? And how can we look at whatever other needs we have out there and do it in a way that, you know, we work together? So
give me an example of, you said there were some good examples of public safety and how it's working. Give me a specific.
Some of the examples would be like with the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe. They cross-deputize highway patrol men and women. So when they go to Crow Creek, has an annual big fair and rodeo. Each tribe usually does this, and they use it kind of as a tourism draw to their communities. And the folks we're talking about as a great working relationship, and how some of the state funds have even been used to fix roads and to fix the powwow grounds. And I was encouraging that they do some community policing efforts where the police show up and get involved in the community activities before there's a crisis situation. So when our community members see a policeman, it's not at the critical time when there's an emergency in their first initial contact with them. So by seeing them at the powwow, I was told that they were serving at public, usually we have free food and stuff for folks, and so they were out serving food, they were providing security services, they were also cleaning up the grounds afterward. Those type of things go a long way in making sure that people trust and have a good working rapport with one another. So I really applaud them for their work they're doing in Crow Creek. We got eight other tribes, and we got a lot of powwow grounds that could use some fixing. So I told them some of those jurisdictional issues will probably go away if folks see the working relationship that has happened in Crow Creek and other areas. And I would just highlight one more, and that would be through extradition efforts. And the state pointed out that, you know, they don't have extradition agreements that are formal. Oftentimes with tribes, it's really tough sometimes for some of the folks who are being wanted by the state, and they're hiding out, and it might even be somebody who's not even a Native American. Maybe there's somebody who's Hispanic, and they're seeing this as an opportunity to, you know, stay away from the state and use the jurisdiction to their advantage. So we don't want those criminals hanging around our reservation communities any more than public safety officials do. So we talked about extradition agreements, and the one that they have working with the Sisseton Wahpeton tribe seems to be noteworthy, and one that they're saying is a great example of how they have, you know, used it to transfer one person from one jurisdiction to another and do it seamlessly where there's no problems that arise out of that. And they said each tribe can do it in their own unique way, but this was one example where they had success. They said maybe they'd invite other tribes to look at what they're doing and see if we can improve some of those relations and some of those cooperative agreements that are being done in, for example, Sisseton. Maybe Rosebud could adopt something like that. So it's a good chance to have some really good discussions.
So my understanding is that meth is a big problem throughout the state of South Dakota, largely due to our rural nature and also due to just the culture. What are some of the specific problems and challenges that you guys talked about methamphetamine?
Well, that's pretty easy for everybody to get on the same side against meth and talking about how we can, again, use whatever resources we have to coordinate and collaborate. Some of the examples that they had used is for Rosebud community, we have a working relationship between the state and tribal officials that's kind of precipitated by this drug task force, I think it's called Safe Trails Task Force, and I think Rosebud has, there's three DCI agents who are working, doing drug investigations, but, you know, sometimes when we had a recent situation where one of our police officers was shot here on the Rosebud, we had a three-day manhunt, and one of those DCI agents was working in our area, in our community, and he was asking he help. Participate in looking for this fugitive here. So sometimes they're asked in a unique situation to do something beyond what the scope of work is, and typically they say, no problem, we got a vehicle, we're out here in Parmalee, we'll go up and down some of the roads, talk to some of the folks out here and see if we can help out in any way. So those are good examples to say, here's, you know, we're fighting against meth, we also have this other situation where we have a fugitive, maybe we can work together with some of the drug officers to help us in those other areas. So those type of things are excellent examples, and we spent all day, you know, we had a lot of good examples of that type of thing. So I was really happy to hear that there are so many successful, positive examples of where tribes and state are working together without any sovereignty or sovereign immunity or jurisdictional issues that seem to come to the forefront. Those things are put to the back, and we figure out what we have as commonalities, and we work from them.
How do you work on building that trust? You mentioned just community policing. Are there other ways that you work on building trust between governments to go forward and rise above some of those jurisdictional issues?
Well, I like the example of Crow Creek, where I was surprised that they were saying they even had money to help fix the powwow grounds, and I use that as an example of saying, okay, here's the state that has some monies that the last thing you would expect that they could be used for is some road leading to a powwow ground. And yet that's the type of thing that goes a long way in securing the trust of the membership of the tribes, as well as the tribal governments and the elected officials from the tribes, who see that the state isn't just paying lip service to wanting to help. They're actually boots on the ground. They're actually putting forth dollars in their budget so that, you know, this type of thing can be developed and that we can continue those positive areas of working relationships that we've already established in the state.
Representative Bordeaux, are there specific issues that you would like to see gain traction, some ones that are not necessarily the ideal success story, but areas of opportunity?
I would. And last year, you know, we kicked around what we want to do as a committee, and after the end of our meeting, we did the same. And last year, we had a lot of steam built up from one of our former representatives from Sioux Falls, Representative Steve Hickey, and he was really keying in on this race relations as a critical factor in moving forward as a state. And I chimed in, and I agreed with him, and we sent a letter to Governor Dugard, and I didn't get a chance to see that he responded. I was told later that he responded, and he didn't feel that it was necessary at this time, that we had a lot of good things that the state was doing with the tribes, that we had some bills that were regarding education and we're putting out some efforts there. But what I brought to the committee was our last year our vice president was involved in a couple of the governor's advisory council on education, and also Representative Hagar's economic development tribal economic development group, and one of our he's a former representative and former vice president, and he works for the president's office now, and he issued a challenge in our Todd County Tribune last week, and I couldn't help that he called us out specifically and saying that he's frustrated by the racism in South Dakota. He pointed out the governor's visit to the Rosebud Sioux tribe. A couple of the comments that he felt the governor made were inappropriate. And he was saying that racism is a leadership issue, and I'm quoting him from the paper, or perhaps a lack of leadership issue. He says the governor and the legislature, the Rosebud Sioux tribe elected leaders, and other tribal elected leaders must start this discussion about racism. And he went back to say, you know, recently a lacrosse team in Watertown was called the Prairie N-word, and some of our youth were accosted with other names throughout the year, being called wagon burner and such like this during basketball tournaments. And he said, you know, if we would just address this issue, we could probably find ways of moving past it. But when certain people don't feel that it's necessary that we have this discussion, then it kind of leads to growing other issues. And what I would like to say is, going back to when we had the former, God rest his soul, Governor Mickelson, when he said in 1990 that we should have a year of reconciliation and we should have 100 years of reconciliatory efforts of working with the tribes. I think he might have set the bar too high for South Dakota leadership. I don't think anybody's wanted to touch the issue ever since then.
So do you agree that racism is a leadership issue or a lack of leadership issue?
I believe the leadership really must take this issue on. And I would point out that, you know, we've had DSS in the newspaper and how the tribes have fought against, and one of our state judges was even fined for the way they conducted themselves in handling, you know, the issue regarding Native American foster children or children that are taken off the reservation. And the last one that really comes to mind is the Pesh Law into Trust. You know, we've purchased, our tribe, the Rosebud Sioux tribe, purchased a lodge just north of Bear Butte. And we've been paying taxes for quite some time in Meade County and the Sturgis area. And we did that for religious purposes so that we can put our people up in certain times of the year and pray on Bear Butte, considered one of the four most sacred places in the universe. And when we bought Pesh Law for about $11 million, the price went up so high that it actually quadrupled what the taxation amount was. The property tax was $20,000, I think, the year before last. And last year, the tribes had to pay $80,000 into the tax base of Pennington County. And when the Pennington County commissioners approved, or didn't approve, but they went along with the BIA or the federal government putting that land into trust, we were shocked to see the governor and the attorney general and the folks from South Dakota fighting us on that issue. And it seems like, as a sacred place, this isn't something we'd want to put a casino or anything like that. But when the governor come down here and talked about it, he kind of said, grandma needs groceries, grandma needs transportation, grandma needs housing, and you need to focus on what grandma needs rather than spending your money in some other jurisdiction or somewhere, you know, outside of our reservation community. So that really didn't sit well with a lot of people, and there was a lot of comments that resulted from, you know, that meeting, that people just didn't understand each other, and that maybe, you know, our people may be poor, we're the second poorest county in the country, but we certainly prioritize our spiritual nature and our religious aspects of our culture, and we put those things at the top. And if we're poor and we want to spend our money on some sacred site, then we should be allowed to do so. And that kind of is what I heard resonate from people who were around the meeting afterward. And so
did
I would
people
leave
think
those
it,
comments.
Did people think that that was an inaccurate assessment of it from a financial standpoint, or just an insensitive or ignorant representation of cultural?
Insensitive and ignorant are probably, you know, the more appropriate words. I don't think he had any malice in what he was saying, other than say, you folks are really cash-strapped or you're really resource-strapped. I would like to see you spend more money on your home front. $11 million is a whole lot of money that could have went towards taking care of your critical needs. A lot of our people are in survival mode and barely go from check to check, and you know, many of our people survive on, you know, such a little subsistence that, you know, it's hard to imagine why the tribe would spend money on something that, you know, we haven't even figured on how we're going to do some development. And we'd probably keep it in its pristine, we wouldn't want to really develop it much. So just the fact that it's a sacred site and we've been passed down this information from generation to generation, we want to keep it that way, and I think we want to be able to decide ourselves how it's appropriate that we spend our resources.
Where does that decision stand today on Peshla?
I think what will happen is they'll have a hearing, and the South Dakota government will be taken into account, and it's still up to the federal government. The Department of Interior will look to see whether they should overturn and not put it into trust. They've already put it into trust, and so it's already been transferred into that status. Mm. And now South Dakota, objecting to it, could have it removed, or whatever that hearing process is, will lead us to a final determination by the Department of Interior.
I see. I want to talk a little bit about Indian Health Services and some of the recent news there with privatization. What's your take on that? How is it affecting the community?
Well, that was one of the things that the governor talked about when he was here. He talked about Medicaid expansion, and he had a really lively discussion with one of our tribal elders, and she's a program director from our alcohol treatment center, and she was against expanding Medicaid. And the governor had a really compelling discussion to where she even agreed at the end of his discussion that maybe, you know, we should consider it. But, you know, from the tribal perspective, we view it as a treaty right. Mm-hmm. So we feel like given the treaties and the U.S. Constitution still says that the treaty's the law of the land, that we feel the health of our people shouldn't be determined by the Obamacare or whatever other act that Congress has passed that will, you know, give us funding for our Indian Health Service. We have a beautiful facility here in Rosebud. Unfortunately, we can't keep doctors around long. We can't seem to do all the necessary functions to keep us in a efficient, tight-running operation that, you know, we could be proud of. But at the same time, when they went and they shut down our facility, some of our people were dying off because now we have, you know, 60 miles to drive to Winter and 50 miles to drive to Valentine to try to find a hospital that'll take care of our critical needs.
Is there optimism about the privatization from an out-of-state company, or is there skepticism about it being solved soon?
Well, as always, we would like to grow within. We would like to see tribal members from our particular tribe that work here. There is a good cadre of folks that are homegrown employees in our facility. However, some of our key people come from the outside. We might have doctors and some of our critical needs people are flown in, and it's just very sporadic, and oftentimes it's just for too short a term. Somebody just gets to kind of learning and understanding our culture and our ways, and then they get moved on to someplace else. So if we could keep the same people, that would go a long ways. But, you know, we're understanding that our hospital is a very important part of our community. And for us to be considered the worst hospital in the nation in the Indian Health Service, that's really a black eye. And I like to think that with Indian Health Service here, we should be able to bring in a lot of dollars from the federal government into South Dakota and help a lot of our folks. We're spread out over five counties, and in fact, some of the other reservation community residents from like Crow Creek or Lower Brule, they come down to our hospital when they know we have some doctors that might be able to take care of whatever their particular ailment is. And so we serve a pretty good sized region of several counties, and I think if there's a way that we could work together with the state of South Dakota, and you know, part of what the tribes are looking for from the state of South Dakota is for them to put their own skin in the game. It's pretty easy for South Dakota to say, as long as the federal government's going 100% and they're funding every bit of anybody who's eligible, then sure, of course South Dakota's going to want to participate. I believe South Dakota paid 48 or 60-some million dollars last year, and I'm a perfect example myself. I have a large family. I have a income from my job at the college at St. Tegaleska University, but my kids are eligible, so I have them signed up for Medicaid. And they go to Mission Medical Clinic here, and they're seen and they're in and out within an hour. Whereas if they go to Rosebud, it's touch and go. It might take 4 to 6 hours before they're done.
Hmm.
and they might have to be sent out somewhere to a specialist in Rapid City. And even though they were sent out by the Rosebud Sioux Tribe's, contract health services, I might get that bill myself and not have, any means of paying it. And I thought when the hospital sent me out that they would pay for the thing. So now I'm looking at bad credit as an example that many of our people face. So
sure.
When I take my kids to Mission Medical, the state is paying 48% of their bill. The feds are paying 52%. I don't think it's a very good deal for South Dakota, because whether they like it or not, I'm going to whatever's the best service for me. And I know I could go to IHS and get my kids taken care of there, but why would I when this other place seems to be doing a better job? And I'd like to look out for the state of South Dakota, but until things change, I'm going to continue going the route I do, and it's going to continue to cost South Dakota money out of its pockets just to service me.
Representative Sean Bordeaux, I feel like we're always just getting started, and then we're out of time. So we're going to leave it there, but we'll have you back on some other time. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoy every bit of it.